Welcome to The Lore You Know, a show where we chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. And I cannot tell you how excited I am right now to have my friend Nikki Clement with us today.
I'm still working out right now. It's so much fun.
This is so exciting. I'm going to get you on here and have you tell me stories so I can hear your awesome accent. That's
you just want to hear the Cajun words. That's all it is.
That's right. I'm going to give you a list of words just to say to me.
I'm just your fix. I get it. I understand.
Oh, man. Well, for people that are familiar with Small Town Monsters, as they should be if they're listening to this podcast, you should recognize Nikki from Skinwalker : Howl of the Rougarou. Nikki is officially an STM alum.
Yes. Man, I was so nervous for that. But the shot, yeah, they're so beautiful. Like in the bayou and stuff, man, they did such a good job. It was beautiful.
Aw, I'm glad that you approve of it. Okay, before we get into all these questions that I have for you, can you give everyone a connection that you have to the paranormal, to the supernatural, to the weird? We already went over Howl of the Rougarou, but what's your connection here to this world?
Where to start? Well, when I was a kid, I could see things that no one else could. I could hear things, you know, whispers, talking, you know, and people thought I was just, you know, I had an imaginary friend or I was making everything up. But it was never that. It was, looking back now, I see that it was me coming into my mediumship, because I do believe that I am a medium. Now, are my skills very honed to where I could do amazing things? Probably not, you know, but I've had some very, very cool experiences just from that. So I think that's pretty valuable.
Absolutely. I've had
so many experiences. It's just been one thing right after another.
Yeah. It's been exciting to talk with you off camera about all of the experiences that you've had and you're still continuing to have. You're still out exploring.
Yeah.
Going ghost hunting and everything else, which is awesome. So if we go back to Howl of the Rougarou, you said you were nervous, but what was it like? Just set the scene. What was it like to be interviewed by STM?
Oh, man. I remember telling you how sweet they were. Like, they were just the sweetest group of guys I've ever met in my whole life. They were just so respectful. And the thing that I love the most is how respectful the film is to our culture and the folklore and everything else, because, you know, a lot of people, they tend to focus on the not so savory parts of Louisiana, like, oh, you know, you married your cousin. No, it's not how it is. I mean, I'm sure some people do, but we do have a lot of gifts to offer the world and the United States. I mean, New Orleans was one of the oldest, it's one of the oldest cities in the U.S. and it's packed with history and folklore and legends. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, there are two sides to every coin, I suppose, but I just really, really appreciate the way they made everything just so respectful and they focused on the culture. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, where you were interviewed, was there any concern? This is coming from somebody who has not been to Louisiana. Was there any concern of natural wildlife about to attack you at any moment while you were being interviewed? Because you had an outside interview.
We were sitting right by the water. Yeah. Right by the bayou. Honestly, I think I was more afraid of the mosquitoes than anything else.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I've swam in gator infested water. I mean, I don't know many people from down here that has not swam in gator infested water. Like you can usually tell the people that have not, but yeah, I've swam in the bayou, grew up doing that my whole life. And so not much scares me out there except for the bugs. I'm not a fan of the bugs.
That's fair. Are the mosquitoes like, okay. So I'm curious now, cause I haven't been there. The mosquitoes, are they little mosquitoes or are they big mosquitoes? Cause I'm thinking when I was in Alaska, they had huge mosquitoes up there.
Yeah, they are huge. They,
ew.
we usually call them our state bird because, yeah, well, you know,
yeah,
they are something. They are way too big. I don't like it.
It's unacceptable. Well, obviously when we were down there interviewing you, we were interviewing you for the Rougarou. So would you mind getting into your connection with the Rougarou and say Rougarou a couple times in there for me?
Damn it, Heather. God, now I'm watching what I say. Okay, so my family, well, as you know, not everybody else knows this, but as you know, half my family is, you know, Appalachian, and the other half is, you know, like Creole and Cajun. And so my grandparents, that's who raised me, and my pawpaw, he was half Cherokee. So that, you know, I learned a lot about that particular culture as well, you know, on top of everything else. And so we did a lot of our own, you know, the food that we ate came from farming and just, you know, doing our own chickens and beef and all that. So one summer, you know, we did what we always do. We started to plant our gardens and put everything in place, and we were tilling the ground, and we ended up finding just, I can't even tell you how much it was. I just know it was a lot of just Native American artifacts. And it was mainly arrowheads. And, you know, I just remember being so fascinated because I had been told stories about, you know, different little legends and stuff like that. And they taught us how to, like me and my cousins, I mean, when I say us, they had taught us how to make our own bows and arrows and things like that when we were kids anyway. And so I was fascinated. And I'm like, okay, you know, and once my papa saw all this stuff, though, he started freaking out and he was like, no, we got to put it all back. And I'm like, okay. But, you know, me, I was ornery child. And, you know, I was like, okay, I'm just going to take one of these and slip it away. And I'm going to put it in my pocket and take it in my room. And so I did that. And then, oh, man, that started a beautiful, I say that very tongue in cheek, that started a very beautiful experience with that Anubis looking figure that I believe was a version of the Rougarou. So yeah, it was, you know, that first night it was just sort of like, all I could see was the outline in the doorway. And I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm dreaming, right? I gotta be dreaming. That's, odd thing to just, you know, see. And then, you know, it just progressed until this entity was doing what we call these days mind speak, mm-hmm. and, you know, telepathy. And it was telling me to put the things that I had found back, because I needed to honor my heritage and not disgrace my family, you know? And once they started to talk to me, I kind of understood, you know, and I was like, mm-hmm. okay, this has to, you know, but I did not think of it as the Ruguru until I got older.
Right.
Because, you know, in most Native culture, those are just protector spirits. And so mm-hmm. I was just thinking that, you know. And so I got older and they started telling me more and more legends about the Ruguru and, you know, all that. And I was like, started putting two and two together. And I'm like, okay, this is not, you know, I think it was a little bit of both, to be honest. I think because the Ruguru can come in so many different forms. Mm-hmm. It can literally shapeshift. I mean, it is a shapeshifter.
Right.
So it was a little scary because, you know, I was probably about 8 years old at the time, but mm-hmm. overall, I mean, it kick started all of, you know, my entire journey into the paranormal because I have not stopped since.
Yeah.
It's just been one thing after another and I can't get enough of it.
So once you were told put it back, did you put it back then? And did that stop the stop it from showing up?
I did not put it back at first because like I said, I was a very stubborn child. I'm still very stubborn, let's put that out there. It took about 4 to 5 days, 4 to 5 nights of this happening before I finally said, okay, you know, because it started getting progressively closer to the bed. And once it got so close to where it was towering over me, I was like, okay, I think I'm going to listen now. I'm sufficiently freaked out. Thank you. You know? So,
right.
So I took it, I put it back and I never saw it again.
Wow. Wow. I like that it was, it seems that it was not aggressive in giving you plenty of chance, many chances to heed its warning before it was going to intimidate you to the point of getting you to move. He didn't start towering over your bed.
I honestly think it was because I was a kid, you know, I think that they can determine, you know, age and mental capacity and stuff like that. And I think it was just because I was a child. Otherwise, it probably would have been like, you know, I don't, it probably would have been like, get your, you know.
Yeah, maybe it would have started.
Walmart's coming after you with a spoon.
Right. Now, when you saw it, did you talk to your family about what you were seeing? Or did you kind of keep that to yourself?
I kept it to myself for a very brief period of time, but they noticed that I was not wanting to go to sleep. You know, I've always had insomnia, but that did not make it any better. And, you know, I was like, okay, that's going to be in my room again. So that's going to be interesting. But, they noticed that. And so they finally set me down and they're like, okay, you know, what's going on? And so I told them and my mama was very much like, okay, you know, it was probably a dream, you know, calm down, you know, just think happy thoughts before you go to sleep. We'll get you a nightlight, you know, all the normal things. But my papa, his face was just like, okay, you know, he said, I hope you learned your lesson because this is, you know, this is part of it. And you have to make sure that you do not take anything. And he made sure, he went through my entire room and made sure everything was back in the ground.
Nice.
Yeah.
He took it seriously.
He did. Because I mean, the legends tell you that, you know, if you cross certain spirits or you, you know, disgrace your family, then that's pretty, pretty bad.
Yeah. Did he have a name for it that he used or?
Not really. I mean, he wouldn't really say any name. He just said the thing you know? And to me, I was curious why he would never say the name. But now that I know, you know, a lot more about this whole entire world, I realized that, you know, if you say, a lot of Native people think that if you say the name, that it invites them to come back, or it gives them permission to come back, or it, you know, it draws some sort of attention from the spirit world in general. And he did not want to do that because he was very much a straight edge military man. And so he was not about to, you know, indulge in that particular proclivity of mine, I suppose. He just wanted me to, you know, mind my P's and Q's and to get away from all that because he did not want to talk about it.
Right, right. Were there any tales that he did tell you while you were growing up about different folk tales of any sort, whether it's with creatures or just ways to live, ways to be?
Not him, but his mm-hmm. sister taught me quite a few things. You know, she made me all kind of jewelry all the time. She made, you know, she would make me blankets and just all kind of different stuff. And she would tell me things about, like, you know, one of the things is about, like, hair, you know, like, try to let your hair grow as much as possible because it connects you to the spirit world, things like that. I mean, that's pretty common knowledge, though. There are so many things
that they taught me.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And when you're, like when you're grieving, like if you've had like a, you know, it can be anything, bad breakup, child loss, you know, whatever it may be, any type of grief. If you cut your hair, it helps with your grief. Like it's a sign of grieving. And so, you know, you just, it shows the spirit world that you are in need of support and help.
Wow. That has me thinking about all of these times that I had wanted to cut my hair or did cut my hair. It was always during times of extreme frustration or, you know, feeling loss of control in some situation or something like that.
Yeah, I've done it quite a few times. It's finally starting to grow back out now, but you know.
Yeah,
It's very cathartic, to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, you chop it off and you're just like, okay, you know, all that weight, all that negative energy is just, it's gone. And you can start fresh. Right.
That's awesome. Okay, so you grew up with an interesting mix of like the Appalachian lore and then the Creole lore. So I'm curious, because I found out about this, I remember it was last summer, I found out about this character in Cajun lore. And then I immediately messaged you and said, Nikki, why did you not tell me about this? So I'm wondering did you grow up with this guy?
I think most people down here do. I mean, unless your family is just exclusively not, you know, unless you're a transplant, we'll put it that way. But yeah, I mean, he is an interesting character.
Yeah, he is.
it always makes me laugh.
This was
because they're like, oh, he comes on alligators.
Yeah, I didn't.
Like,
he rides on alligators, guys. For anybody that's listening and doesn't know about Papa Noel.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Google search will show you the best pictures ever. He's like on a, you know, you have your sleigh, but then you have, instead of the reindeer, it's gators.
Right. And there's a white one, isn't there?
Yeah, I think that's sort of like our version of Rudolph. which is wild. I don't know. We're very creative people.
This is so amazing to me. Yeah. Damn. Yes. Yeah. This book, which no one that's listening will be able to see it, but there's this book by Terry Hoover Dunham. It's a children's book, The Legend of Papa Noel, A Cajun Christmas Story. And it's beautifully illustrated as well. And there's pictures in there. And I think even in here, I had sent some messages to you, like, how do you pronounce this word? Because you guys have mix of French within your dialect, and that just goes right over my head.
Yeah, I mean, well, we have a mixture of, it's like Spanish, native French, and English. It's all mixed.
Yeah, like this. Yeah, that's French. I would hold it up, but it's not. It's not worth it right now for the podcast for me to hold up lines from the children's book and say, "Nikki, read this to me, please." But
they don't want your weird things, Heather. Just calm down.
No, this Papa Noel, though, you guys have that story, but also you told me, and you even sent me links of, okay, explain what you guys do around Christmas time for Papa Noel. There's a whole thing that occurs that I need to see in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah. They take and they build these beautiful, I don't really know what you would call them, statues out of wood. And we put them all down the levees to basically light his way down to, you know, down to Louisiana. So that way he knows we're here and we're ready to go.
Yeah.
And these,
you set them on fire.
These beautiful works of art. I mean, they really are complete works of art. I would highly recommend, man, I wish I had one, a picture of one, but I would highly recommend Googling the bonfires for Papa Noel, because I mean, they are just gorgeous, and they light them all on fire about pretty much at the same time, or maybe I believe it's at the same time. That way, you know, it just continuously burns all the way down.
Right. And he can see his way to the kids.
Oh, yeah.
That is so, so cool.
It really is. And, you know, and you grow up doing that. And then, you know, sometimes you go to other places for Christmas, other states or whatever. And sometimes it's a little bit like, oh, y'all don't have giant fires? Okay, well, I guess it's just us then.
Yeah, how boring are you guys? Jeez.
They're all maniacs.
Oh, man. So shifting a little bit to, I guess, away from Papa Noel and the that awesome story, you are going to be involved with a podcast soon, yes?
If all goes right, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm sort of self-taught on a lot of things that I know about podcasting and recording and stuff like that. So we are going to try to do a podcast about Louisiana history, folklore, just preserving our culture, the language, you know, the coastline support, stuff like that, because the coastline is eroding, you know, just like inches per day, I think it is. And yeah, that's really sad, because we do have one of the, aside from Florida, we do have one of the largest wetlands in the United States. So, you know, we're just trying to, I'm not sure if he wants to be named necessarily just yet until we get a first episode out.
Right.
So I'm kind of holding that one a little close at the moment, but if all goes well, yeah, it'll be me and this wonderful, sweet guy that I know, that he already has a platform set for his Louisiana history videos and stuff like that. And it's pretty exciting, because I love our culture and our history, and I just really want to share that with the world. And I think a lot of people are very fascinated with it. And I can appreciate that, because I'm fascinated with all folklore and history.
You mentioned the wetlands and the coast eroding, and I'm curious if that's something that, I mean, is widely talked about. Are you aware of that because you've looked into it, or is this something that, like, people in Louisiana know, they accept, they're trying to stop. I mean, like, I'm just, I guess my question is, how much of the environmental talk is something that happens on a regular basis down there?
Well, since Hurricane Katrina, it's become, that was 2005. Ever since that happened, it has become pretty forefront in most conversations about almost anything, really, because if, you know, if our coastline erodes and goes away and we lose all of our wetlands, and I mean, there are cities that are now underwater because of all of that. I mean, and that's history, that's folklore, that's everything else that's combined with, you know, everything that we grew up knowing, and that's culture, you know, and we're losing inch by inch every single day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the same thing as the language. I mean, you know, our mumbles and pupples, they spoke French to each other, or Creole to each other. They spoke, you know, that to the other family members to talk about other people, or, you know, vice versa. And it is a dying language. And, you know, we are trying desperately to bring it back to let, you know, to teach our children.
Mm-hmm. Were you taught fully the language, or was it kind of just spoken amongst adults?
Yeah, it was adults. They would talk about, they would usually talk about us kids to each other, and they would use French, you know? So we picked up bits and pieces, you know. I took like conversational French, like formal French. I took that in high school. I took like 6 years of that. So, I mean, I love the language, and I would love to know. I've been trying to get a hold, or to get in contact with somebody to learn, or to find maybe classes where I could learn more, you know, of the language itself, because there are a lot of things that I just don't know. And I want to, because, you know, unfortunately, my grandparents, both sets, they're dead now. So I have I don't really have any, I don't have a bridge to that part of the language, you know? And so I'm trying to find one, because it would be nice to be able to pass that down to my kids, and then their kids, and then, you know, eventually bring it back a lot more.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I understand that. I agree with that completely. And it's something that, when we lose the older generations, like you said, it's lost. If we don't find ways to bring it back, it's just going to be gone. Then we just won't have it anymore.
Yeah. And to me, that's one of the most sad parts of just growing and getting older in general, because, you know, you start to lose everyone in your family and people you know, and then there goes parts of your culture, there goes parts of your folklore that maybe nobody ever told anyone. And it's, I don't know, I think it's a double-edged sword, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and a lot of times we don't recognize that until we're older, and they're either gone or, you know, very old. And yeah, it's sad, sad stuff for sure. So thinking back to your grandparents, what were some of the, I mean, what are some of your fondest memories of them? Things that you guys did together, or stories that they told you, things like that?
Oh, man. there was quite a bit. My papa in particular, you know, he would talk about the way that he grew up. But I mean, it was so different from down here that it was not particularly, you know, about Louisiana. It was more about like Kentucky and Tennessee. So I don't know. I mean, it was such a mixed bag, because, you know, like we mentioned before, like my dad's parents and his side of the family, they are, you know, they're actually Melungeon, you know, like,
okay.
Yeah. So, you know, they have their own little set of everything that we, you know, were taught. And then my mom's side of the family, that's the Cajun and Creoles. And so, you know, I had a dose of both sides, and it was interesting, because there were certain things that they would keep close to the chest, you know, and they didn't really tell me and my cousins, but I don't know. You know, I think that also goes back to what we were just mentioning about how some of the culture is just dying, because there are a lot of, you know, legends and stuff that people have just simply lost because mm-hmm. people refuse to talk about it. Because once Christianity took over, you know, the Roman yeah. Catholic Catholicism, once they took over and they sent a lot of the Cajun kids, Creole kids into the Catholic schools, you know, their language and the legends, they were pretty much, I hate to say it because I don't want to offend anyone, but they were pretty much beat out of them. Like they were not allowed to share any of that information. And so when they, you know, they carried that into adulthood, and when they became parents, they didn't really want to tell us anything because that would pull back that culture. And then, you know, everything that they were taught in the Catholic schools, mm-hmm. you know, they were like, okay, yeah, no, we're not going to teach that anymore because that we were told that was wrong and, you know, ungodly or whatever. And, mm-hmm. you know, so we weren't really told that much.
Right.
I had to seek out a lot of information on my own when I became old enough to do that.
When you started looking into all of this culture that is your family's, have you found bits and pieces that I guess feel like home as you find them? Like, okay, that's me. I definitely get that.
I would say yes and no. And I think the no part is because they did not necessarily teach it to me. You know, I had to go seek the information myself.
Right.
But I mean, there are certain things like that I have experienced myself that became, you know, later on I would learn about, and I'm just like, wait a minute, I've experienced that. You know, so yeah. There's that connection. Yeah, because I've had some interesting experiences. Especially,
yeah. What are some of those experiences?
Trekking through the woods in the middle of nowhere. Well, like one good example is like the faux filet. Like they are. Y'all don't mind her. This is normal. I was trying to think of a French word to say real quick, but no, I can't. My brain is mush. But, you know, there was one night we were, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but people down here, we go frogging. Like we go okay. look for these, I mean, there are these huge, huge toads. Like they are ridiculously huge. And basically what people do down here is we cook them and eat them.
Okay.
Now, yeah, a lot of people are going to be like, what? But yeah, it's true. We cook them, eat them. One of the things, the most common ways that you will see a frog is frog legs. And we usually fry them. And they actually, it tastes a lot like chicken, you know, so it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So we had been frogging that night. We, you know, you take like a little boat, whatever, and you go out in the middle of the bayou and you take your, you know, your spotlight and you look around and you find the biggest frogs you can and you grab them and you put them in a sack or whatever, bring them home. You know, if unfortunately you do have to end their life, and then mm-hmm. you know, you chop them up and you fry them and eat them. So that's a brief rundown of that happened. And so we were doing that, and when you go down the bayou, I call them like causeways because they're like little roads, because sometimes, you know, you have a wider part of the bayou, and then sometimes you have a very small piece. And when you get in those little small, slim pieces, you're very close to the land on both sides. So, you know, you have no choice but to look around to make sure you're not going to hit land. So we are going down this little slim part, and we start seeing these lights in the trees. And we're like, you know, we're miles from anywhere. What could this possibly be? And so, you know, we're sitting there, and we eventually get so curious that we start to pull over to the actual land. We get out of the boat. We go look for them because I'm crazy. And, you know, woo! So we get out and we go looking for them. And it basically just leads us deeper and deeper and deeper into the bayou. Like, we were in the middle of the woods before we realized that, okay, we have gone too far. You know, we might want to, it's a good thing we brought our flashlights, because we were very far in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, all we heard was animals. You know, you get in the bayou at night and you hear all kind of things. It's scary. It's a little scary because you don't know what's out there, you know, because we have like the Honey Island Swamp Monster and all kind of stuff. And you're just like, oh, okay, what was that noise? And, but it turns out, you know, later on, we were telling, you know, like our aunts and uncles and different things like that, like, hey, you know, there was these lights and we chased them, and, you know, then they just disappeared once we got to a certain point. And they were like, oh, you met the little, if I'm not mistaken, it translates to kind of like forest fairies.
Okay.
So basically they are a type of fairy in Cajun folklore. Mm-hmm. And they will lure you. They're not very nice. They will usually lure you into the middle of nowhere to play tricks on you. And sometimes there have been, well, I don't know if they are true documented cases, but there have been cases of people that were lured to the middle of nowhere and they ended up deceased. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thank goodness we had the proper equipment to go out in the middle of nowhere. Otherwise, we might have ended up on that list. So,
right. What did the lights look like? Can you describe them?
They look like orbs.
Okay.
I mean, and you know, there's like this hot debate on, you know, are orbs really spirit activity, or is it just dust, or, you know, whatever. But these are literal balls of light. It looks like it's like a white light, or like a, It looks like, I'm trying to find a good comparison, sort of like a light bulb, and like you see it and you walk toward it, but then it starts to get dimmer the closer you get to it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
It is very much just a ball of light. And I mean, and you know, you and I both know that fairy folklore, there's quite a bit of balls of light, and they lure you to different places, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. And so basically, yeah, that's what I've always sort of, you know, put it into, is the category is they were just fairies. They're just tricksters.
Yeah. That's why they say you're not supposed to follow them, but I would follow them. I have followed them just like you.
Yes, I never learn. Never, ever. I'm going to either, man, my demise is going to be either following something into the forest that I should not be falling into the forest, or petting something that I know I shouldn't be.
There you go.
There makes sense.
Well, that goes. Yeah, if not meant to be a friend, why friend shaped? That's what I see online all the time.
Why so fluffy?
Right.
I mean, you know.
Why so fluffy? Why?
Exactly. I just want the fluff. Give me the fluff, and then I'm okay. I just want the fluff. I just want a friend.
Exactly. Oh man. So we are coming up on the end of the show, but at the end of each episode, I always ask my guests to tell me a story of some sort. So I'm wondering if you could tell me a story, and it doesn't matter If it is like a cryptid or a ghost story, something you've experienced, just a story that's maybe fresh in your mind that you could relay for us.
Can it be sort of secondhand?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it can.
Because I do have a really good story, but it is secondhand from this very nice lady. I believe the way you pronounce her name is Jeanne.
Okay.
But she had an experience with a vampire, a real vampire in New Orleans.
Oh, so okay. I'm down.
Yeah. I thought you would be. It's good. We're friends. I know these things. So she went down to, you know, everybody, Bourbon Street, you know, everybody goes there. And so she is down there with her friends and she meets this guy. Essentially, she sees him coming down the street. And she said that it looks like, or it looked like he was like every, the sea of people were parting just for him. Mm-hmm. And it was like he was almost floating because he was walking so smooth. And so she's mesmerized, you know, I mean, who wouldn't be, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, he's so handsome and he's mesmerizing. She's like, and I just could not take my eyes off of this guy. And she's like, nobody else really seemed to have noticed him the way that I did. So he literally just walks up to her and starts kissing her in the middle of nowhere. And she's like 17, 18 years old. And this dude, you know, he's probably clearly looking in his 30s. So people are looking at him a little weird, like, okay, sir. And,
yeah,
you know, but she's into it, apparently. She said that she's very, you know, she was like, oh, you know, I was 18 years old and I was very naive. You know, she was like very much into church and stuff like that. So she didn't know a whole lot about Bourbon Street and the world and whatever. Yeah. So, you know, she ends up going back to his house with him. once again, if I had suspicions that somebody was a vampire, would I go? Yes.
Yes.
So let's put that out there. So she goes with him and they go to this beautiful house and he takes her inside and he lays down. She said they lay on the bed, but they do not engage in any adult activities. Mm-hmm. So she said that they end up falling asleep. She's like, and she wakes up and he is cold, like stone. Like she could not get his arm off of her. Like it's just like he is just dead weight. Mm-hmm. And so she's, you know, trying to get out from under him. And she noticed that there are, you know, shutters, like the metal shutters that they have, like in, well, they mostly have them in Europe and stuff. But they're metal shutters that come down over the windows and the doors. So she's in this very, very dark place with this man who will not wake up and he is stone cold. And so she's like, okay, this is very strange. You know, he was so mesmerizing. He was so charming. And why would I come home with, you know, a person that I don't even know? And so she starts thinking about all this stuff and she eventually gets the courage to leave the house and left him there. And she goes back to her friends and she's asking them questions like, oh, do you remember this guy? Do you remember seeing him? You know, anything like that. And they did not remember him at all. Like he didn't exist. And they were like, oh, you know, you were acting so flirty and so, you know, whatever. But we thought that maybe it was just a little bit of the drink or, you know, your excitement for being here. And, you know, she never saw him again. She never heard of anything like that ever again. And she has wondered, I believe she's in her 40s now, and she has thought about him every single day since. but she has never had any other experience with anything like that. So she thinks, you know, I do believe at one point he was drinking something that was red and he told her that she could not have any. And so I'm going to, you know, kind of lay a guess on there that maybe that was maybe blood, possibly. I don't know. But I mean, you know, I mean, there are stories like that, though, all over the place. And right. there, New Orleans, especially the vampire scene in New Orleans. I mean, there are actual, you know, the culture vampires. But then you have the legends of like some of the older families there where, you know, the patriarchs and matriarchs, they are vampiric, so they say. I'm not trying to get on anybody's hit list here. I'm just we're gonna say allegedly, okay? So, but yeah, I mean, you know, she had this amazing experience and it has been with her every day since. And I just, I found, you know, I found her in a group that I'm in for Louisiana legends and stories and stuff like that. And I just thought that was one of the most fascinating encounters that I've ever heard because, I mean, you know, she literally followed him back to his house and then he just stone cold, wouldn't wake up, no heartbeat, just nothing. Yeah. I can't imagine.
Terrifying.
Yeah, that would, it intriguing, yes, for people like me who would pet wild animals and be like, oh, you're so sweet. And then, you know, I'd be like, oh, you're a vampire. Well, I have some questions. Yeah.
I have some questions.
I'm a little curious. I have some questions. Yes. Would you be down for an interview? Can I have some powers? I don't know. But yeah, it was fascinating to me. And I just, you know, I've kept in touch with her, you know, and she said that she's never really had any other paranormal experiences. That was pretty much the only one. Can you imagine that being your only one?
I mean, I think in a lot of ways that would be enough. That would be enough.
Yeah, for a lot of people. Yeah. I'm not sure it would have been enough for me. I'd have to be like, do you have some friends? Can I meet them too? Like,
yeah, friends. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see you going back to the house and checking things out and seeing if you could find him again. I mean, that would make sense. Yeah.
I think the next day she did walk down the street where she thought his house was, but I don't think she found the actual house again. So that is interesting too, because, you know, did the house exist? Where did he really take her? I mean, nobody knows.
Right.
So it's a very open-ended story there, but I mean, nobody knows what happened. Nobody knows if he was real, if he was just somebody who had that charisma to where he could sweet talk a 18-year-old girl into his house. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
It's very intriguing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, man. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Can you please let the listeners know where they could find you if they wanted to share some of their stories with you and want to keep an eye on where you're going and what you're doing?
Yeah. I am on Facebook and Instagram as Moon Mama Business. Very southern twist on a little bit of a witchy things, because that is just, you know, that's the way I am. And so anybody's free to message me, you know, send me a friend request, you know, whatever it may be. If you're interested in more stories or talking the paranormal, I'm always up for that conversation. That's pretty much my social media presence these days, mostly.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for being a part of this. And it was great. And the only regret I have is not having a list of words for you to say for me. Listen, guys, certain accents are super exciting for me. And this is one of them. All right. This is one of them. I can't help it.
No, I trust me. I totally get it. Cause you know, you get certain people, and I mean, my accent is not as strong as most people's. Mine's a little bit of a mixture of everything, but you get some people and they speak in English and it sounds like French. Like you can't even tell the difference most of the time. Yeah. And I love it too. I mean, you know, I grew up around it my whole life, but it's one of the best things ever to me. You know, I hear somebody with a real strong accent and I'm just like, hey, you know, it's good. You know, it's good. It's good to the ears. So I understand. I get it. You know, that's why whenever you say, hey, can you say this for me? Sure. I'll say that.
That's true. That's how my voice messages always start with you. Hey, can you repeat this word? Can you tell me how to say this word?
The one recently, Letiche.
Yes, I threw that in there for right. You. There you go. Well, yeah. Oh man! All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. You can always email me heather@smalltownmonsters.com, and yeah, thanks for listening. And until next time.
The Lore You Know is presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, our upcoming Kickstarter campaign, and much more at smalltownmonsters.com. If you enjoyed this show, consider giving it a like, rating, review, or sharing it with a friend. And be sure to tune in next time for another episode of The Lore You Know.